the 18th Annual Homelessness Marathon Broadcast, a national town hall discussion on poverty and homelessness in America.
I think it would be pretty startling for the majority of the public to know that within about two blocks from the White House itself, there are homeless people sleeping in parks.
This year, we'll be live from the streets of Washington, D.C. That's the Homelessness Marathon Broadcast, coming to you soon and heard right here on this radio station.
This station is KBOO Portland. Hear the Homelessness Marathon live beginning at 5 p.m. Wednesday, February 17th, and continuing until 6 a.m. Thursday morning.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, and as Bill mentioned, Air Cascadia is off today. Instead, we're going to hear an excerpt from the series Between the Lines on the broad coalition campaigning to defeat the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement.
Welcome to Between the Lines, presenting news and analysis of critical issues affecting our region, the nation, and the world. This week we present Jessup Bonner of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, who talks about the campaign to defeat the proposed Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement in the U.S. after the pact was signed in New Zealand on February 4th. But first we begin with a summary of some of the week's underreported news stories.
Fifteen years ago, the fertile fields near La Hormiga, Colombia, were filled with coca leaves growing everywhere and farmers flush with cash as a leftist insurgency prospered. This was ground zero for Plan Colombia, a massive multi-pronged effort funded by nearly $10 billion in U.S. aid that was launched in the year 2000. The program's goal was to assist a country with a dysfunctional government and economy in the grips of drug mafias, leftist guerrilla groups, and right-wing militias. But the security gains came at a high cost. In the first 3 years of the plan, 1.8 million people were forcibly displaced from their homes as violence and aerial spraying peaked. The military, which received the bulk of U.S. aid, was embroiled in a scandal in which soldiers executed as many as 3,000 civilians and presented them as combat deaths to inflate the body count. Over the last decade, Colombia's economy has improved and the level of violence has fallen sharply. Now, Colombian President Manuel Santos and the leftist FARC rebels are in the final stages of crafting a peace agreement. Santos visited the White House in early February to seek more aid for war-torn communities. But by any measure, Plan Colombia's original goal of eradicating the nation's cocaine crop has failed. Colombia remains the world's top producer of cocaine, with more than 279,000 acres of coca being cultivated in 2014, only slightly below 1999's figures. The New Cuba PAC has raised $350,000 in recent months to support federal candidates who favor easing the U.S. embargo against Cuba. The PAC plans to raise another $100,000 in political funds for House and Senate candidates before November. Among the early donors for the New Cuba PAC are Mike Fernandez, a major donor to Jeb Bush's presidential campaign, former U.S. Secretary of Commerce Carlos Gutierrez, Pat Riley, president of the Miami Heat NBA basketball team, and the Marriott International Hotel chain. The anti-embargo PAC could play an influential role in the campaign to elect a successor to Florida Republican Senator and presidential candidate Marco Rubio. Several potential Democratic and GOP candidates appear supportive of improving U.S.-Cuba relations. The New Cuba PAC competes directly with the pro-embargo U.S.-Cuba Democracy Pact, which is pushing for the return of market capitalism to the island nation, and currently has $200,000 to back pro-embargo candidates. Not long ago, Wisconsin was the hub of progressive politics in the U.S., but in recent years, the upper Midwestern state has swung hard right as GOP Governor Scott Walker and the Republican-dominated legislature passed anti-union laws, gutted environmental protections, and slashed education budgets. 2 years ago, Democrats ran Mary Burke, a corporate CEO, against Scott Walker, offering a conservative, light economic agenda with a handful of moderately progressive positions thrown in. Many grassroots activists and rank-and-file workers sat out the election. Now, 52-year-old progressive strategist Robert Craig, who worked for Citizens Action and the Service Employees International Union, is looking to reinvent the progressive movement in Wisconsin. Working with the Wisconsin Council of Churches and the state's Council on Children and Families, Craig is working on a plan to end poverty and reverse growing income inequality in the state. A long-term goal is cutting the rate of child poverty in half. Craig believes that common-sense Keynesian economics could replace the current conventional wisdom that what corporate America wants is good for the economy. This week's news summary was compiled by Bob Nixon. For Between the Lines, I'm Richard Hill.
Trade representatives of the U.S. and 11 other Pacific Rim nations gathered in New Zealand on February 4th to formally sign the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement that's designed to integrate 40% of the world's economy. Over the next 2 years, the controversial trade pact, known as the TPP, must still be ratified by at least six original signatories, representing 85% of the total GDP of the 12 nations that signed the agreement. While supporters like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and President Barack Obama say the TPP will boost American exports and create jobs, some economic studies warn that the trade agreement will lead to employment losses and increased inequality. U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren, Democrat of Massachusetts, an opponent, said recently that the TPP is about letting multinational corporations rig the rules on everything from patent protection to food safety standards to benefit themselves. The contentious investor-state dispute settlement provision of the TPP allows multinational corporations to challenge local, state, and federal public health, environmental, consumer, and labor laws, as well as court rulings, if a claim is made that they impinge on business profits. Your reporter spoke with Jessa Bonner, International Program Associate with Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, who explains why a broad coalition of labor, environmental, and consumer groups are now engaged in a campaign to defeat the TPP when the trade agreement comes up for a vote in the U.S. Congress.
The Trans-Pacific Partnership, which we refer to as the TPP, is a so-called free trade agreement, and we put the free trade in quotes, between 12 countries, and it's been in negotiation for about 7 years. And the reason that we put the free trade in quotes is because really the TPP has to do with a lot more than what we think of as typical trade issues. So of the TPP's 30 chapters, actually only six of them have to do with these traditional trade issues in terms of lowering, getting rid of tariffs, etc. But instead what we've seen in the TPP is that there are many provisions that actually benefit multinational corporations over workers, the environment, consumers, etc. So this is not actually that surprising, given how the deal was negotiated. So as I mentioned, it was in negotiations for about 7 years. It took a really long time, in part because there was a lot of opposition, global opposition to the deal. But it was basically negotiated in secret, and so the public and the press and civil society were locked out of the negotiations. For the majority of the time that the TPP was in negotiations, U.S. members of Congress were locked out too. And at the end, they received, after a lot of complaining, they received some kind of nominal access where they could request to view certain parts of it. They couldn't talk about it. They couldn't take any notes, etc. But at the same time, as all of these actors were locked out, there were about 500 so-called advisors. So the majority of them representing industry interests, representing corporate interests, that actually had access to the text and the negotiations. And so it's not surprising that the TPP, you know, would benefit these corporations over workers and consumers. And when they finally released the text, we actually saw that it was worse than we thought it would be. There's a lot of concerns. For example, it includes the same kind of language that was in NAFTA that actually makes it easier for big corporations to offshore more American jobs. The TPP would also push down our wages for the jobs that are left because it basically pits American workers more directly in competition with, for example, workers in Vietnam who might make less than 65 cents an hour, It includes monopoly rights for big pharmaceutical companies that raise medicine prices. It would flood us with more imports of unsafe food. It also includes the very controversial investor-state dispute settlement, which allows corporations to challenge public interest policies that they can say affects their ability to make a future profit. There's concerns about internet freedom, rolls back environmental standards. Really, as you mentioned, there's kind of something for everyone to hate, and that's why there's an unprecedented number of organizations that are working against the TPP to try to make sure that Congress will reject it.
Tell us about the candidates running for president, both on the Democratic and Republican side, and their support or opposition to the TPP, to the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement.
In no small part due to the large amount of opposition to the deal, this has really become a politically toxic issue. And really, at this point, the TPP might not even be sent to Congress for approval during this Congress, given that we're an election year and there's been enough pushback. There really isn't a clear majority of support, particularly in the House of Republicans. The people that are in the presidential race that are running for president have really kind of felt the pushback from the American citizens that this is really not a popular issue, that Americans are really opposing this. And because of that, the major people that are vying for the presidency have really had to come out in opposition to the TPP. So, you know, we have Hillary came out opposing the TPP, as well as Bernie Sanders. So both of the candidates that are running on the Democrat side, as well as many of the major candidates that are in the Republican race. So we're really seeing that this issue is one that is really, really politically toxic. And for that reason, the movement to defeat the TPP is really alive and well, and it's very much not a sure thing that Congress would approve the TPP or that it will even be brought up for a vote.
Jessette, lastly, are there any public opinion polls that have been done recently on public attitudes towards this proposed Trans-Pacific Partnership?
One of the thing that tends to come out of polls are that people tend to kind of support the idea of free trade, but once you get started talking about the provisions that are in the trade deals, NAFTA, previous trade agreements, and what the TPP will actually do, there's a lot of opposition to these types of NAFTA-style deals.
That was Jessette Bonner, International Program Associate with Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. For more news and commentary on the battle to defeat the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement, visit our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.
KABU Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the We Real Cool film series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month is A Streetcar Named Desire, showing Thursday, February 18th at 7 p.m. Winner of 5 Academy Awards and considered the first dramatic jazz score of a film, 1951's A Streetcar Named Desire remains a landmark which forced the medium into a new, raw, emotional, mature kind of expression. Again, that's A Streetcar Named Desire, Thursday, February 18th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KABU Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor War Against the People, Israel, the Palestinians, and Global Pacification, a public lecture by Jeff Halper, Tuesday, February 23rd at 7 p.m. at the First United Methodist Church in Portland. Jeff Halper is the longtime head of the Israel Committee Against House Demolitions and is known for his activism on the ground in support of Palestinian rights and a just peace. Jeff will be on a book tour for his recently published book, War Against the People. Again, that's War Against the People, Israel, the Palestinians, and Global Pacification, a public lecture by Jeff Halper, Tuesday, February 23rd at 7 p.m. at the First United Methodist Church, 1838 Southwest Jefferson in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KABU program is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or wilkincpas.com.
Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. Now that the last of the Malia marauders have been taken into custody, it's a good time to examine the bigger picture. The standoff at the Malia National Wildlife Refuge is really just the extremist edge of a growing anti-conservation crusade bent on dismantling crucial environmental protections and abolishing most federal land. The crusade involves more menacing figures than the disgruntled ranchers who terrorized Harney County. This morning, we talk with environmental writer Jimmy Tobias about the crusaders in suits, the senators, the oil lobbyists, the right-wing legislators, who are the real threat to America's public lands. Jimmy wrote a recent article in the Pacific Standard called Beyond the Bundys, the Far Right and the Future of Conservation. His work has appeared in The Nation, Outside, High Country News, and other publications. Jimmy, welcome back to Locus Focus.